ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The moment has come for Juan Manuel Cerúndolo to have a career-defining victory. And it's done. Well, sport truly is the best reality TV.
World number one, Jannik Sinner is out of Roland Garros. Drama! Coming into this tournament, the Italian was the overwhelming pick. So to lose in the second round to a guy ranked 56 in the world, a shock to say the least. What does it mean for the rest of the draw? Well, it's wide open. And it's a good week to be a New South Welsh person. Men's origin into a women's origin clean sweep? Nice. But how much will it compromise the rest of the round? I'm Poppy Penny, and this is ABC Sport Daily. Willis Bennett is a tennis writer for The Times and The Sunday Times in London. And Willis, Jannik Sinner went into Roland Garros as just about the shortest price favourite we've seen. So many Australians probably woke up this morning surprised to see that he's out of the tournament. What happened to the Italian in Paris?
He sure is, Poppy. Jannik Sinner is out of the French Open. He went in as the second shortest favourite on record. I think Rafa Nadal, French Open 2009. Rafa didn't win it in 2009 either. And Jannik Sinner got beat by the sunshine again. If we kind of rewind first, 3 months ago now, the Australian Open, he was on his last legs against Elliot Spizzieri, and the heat scale factor saved him in Melbourne that day. And today in Paris, it was 32 degrees, I think, and he was cruising.
That's not coming back. And set number two is done. 80 minutes for Jannik Sinner to get two sets out in front. Well, he's been a virtually immovable force in 2026, and historically he has been a juggernaut when he's up two sets to none.
He was 6-3, 6-2, 5-1 up in the third, serving for the match, and it was going to be job done inside 2 hours. And then it all unraveled. 18 points in a row he lost. He went on to lose 18 of the next 20 games. He had 18 minutes off court, claiming he was dizzy and felt sick.
I didn't feel very well on court, but can happen. Struggled, starting to feel very dizzy, very low of energy, and tried to serve it out, but didn't have a lot of energy.
And Juan Manuel Cerúndolo beat Jannik Sinner, the world number one, in five sets.
Outwits, outplay, outlast. Juan Manuel Cerúndolo outlasts and overcomes the world number one. His first ever victory versus the top 10 as Cerúndolo is the man of the hour in Paris.
Jannik came into the French having won the past six Masters titles in a row, and he was the heavy, heavy favourite. The bookies gave him about a 66% chance of winning the tournament. So, you know, giving the other 127 players 33% just kind of shows you how dominant Jannik Sinner has been and how everyone expected him to be champion in a week on Sunday.
He's played a lot of tennis, as you mentioned. He's recently Monte Carlo, Madrid, Rome, and he's been winning a lot. But do you think that sort of load of tennis has taken its toll here?
It might have done, mightn't it? I mean, there is something to be said for form and momentum. Sinner won, as you mentioned, all three of the clay court Masters tournaments in the build-up to this. I think he'd always planned to take a little break after the French before Wimbledon, but I'm not sure whether too much tennis was his downfall. I think he is susceptible to these extreme heat conditions. He was playing at 12 o'clock in Paris. Yeah, 32 degrees. Baking heat on the red dirt of Paris, and he just looked wobbly on his feet. He was checking in with his team all the time, leaning on his racket, ice packs all over his face. He just looked like a man that had been beaten by the sun.
Anyone in his half of the draw has likely breathed an enormous sigh of relief to see that he is leaving Paris early. But what might this mean for the rest of the tournament and who our eventual winner might be? Who does this open doors for?
Yeah, it's left a really lopsided draw. So Jannik Sinner's in the top half. Medvedev has already been knocked out of that half.
Adam Walton, what have you done? Daniil Medvedev dismissed in five sets.
And if we look at the bottom half left, we've got Alexander Zverev, who I reckon is now the new favourite. We've got Novak Djokovic, which I can't believe I've just said the fact that Novak's left and he isn't the favourite, but there we have it. Young Jodar of Spain, Casper Ruud. It's absolutely stacked. I think the best stat I've seen so far today, which summarises how lopsided this draw is if you look at the number of players in the top half of the draw that have won an ATP 500 event, there are none. And in the bottom half, there are seven. And I've just realised I've completed that list without mentioning Mr. Alex De Minaur, haven't I? So I'll get told off for that one. But yeah, the bottom half of the draw is seriously tasty. There's a lot of heavy hitters in that.
This is an Australian podcast, Willa, so we've got to hit this. Do you think that this opens any doors for Alex De Minaur, or is he going to struggle too much with the heavy hitters in the bottom half of the draw?
G'day. No, the demon can do it, can't he? It is tough. Look, if he was in the top half of the draw, I'd have my half glass full for Alex. But like we mentioned, the Zverevs and Djokovic and Ruud, there's plenty of serious winners and very good clay court players in his half. But he did pick up some form, didn't he? He struggled early doors on this season's clay, but he went to Hamburg and got some wins under his belt. I don't know. Alex got a chance, hasn't he? He's a quality player, compact, and knows what his strengths are. So, why not? I don't think he'll win it. Is that outrageous to say? But you know what? Why not?
It is Alex De Minaur. First winner of the day on court 14, and that was very impressive. Gets it done in straight sets. He wasn't playing his very, very best, but he just managed the conditions, the situation, the moment.
With people like Jannik falling today, anything can happen, can't it?
On the other side of things, the women's side of the draw, largely it's business as usual.
It is, which is odd to say, isn't it? Usually we get a couple of rounds into a slam and the men's side is pretty reliable and the women's draw is all over the shop and it's quite tricky to predict the winners. But Sabalenka's marching through, Swiatek's marching through, Goff won again today. And my dark horse, I'm not quite, she's a bit too informed perhaps for the dark horse label, but Elina Svitolina is through too. So yeah, you're right. Largely the favourites on the women's side are all still going, yeah.
Absolutely. It's going to be a very interesting second half of the tournament. Willis Bennett, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Bye, Poppy.
Quentin Hull calls Rugby League for the ABC. And Q, it's been a big week for New South Wales, a win in the men's Origin, but I want to talk about the history-making clean sweep in the women's Origin. 12-4 over the Maroons, the first women's team to sweep a series. What makes this New South Wales group so special?
Well, Poppy, they've certainly got a very good up-and-coming coach, John Strange, who's actually the father of Ethan Strange, the Canberra player that played so well in his debut for the Blues in the win in the men's game back on Wednesday night. He's well known for coaching so well at club level for the Roosters in the NRLW, and now 2 years in the Blues job, he's won 5 out of 6 games that he's coached. And it's interesting, they've got a core of senior players. Obviously, you've got to have the cattle as well. But here we are speaking about New South Wales making history by becoming the first women's team to sweep an Origin series. It is only the third year that they have played 3 games.
Isabel Kelly's Blues become the first women to sweep a 3-game Origin series.
They are a very special group. In the men's rugby league, we have players in and out due to Origin commitments, and that always means a little bit of a lopsided round. The West's Tigers, who haven't won since Jerome Luai signed with the Chiefs, take on the Bulldogs, who finally stopped their free fall last week. Who has more to prove when they face off on Saturday, Q?
This is one for the Gwyneth Paltrow fans, isn't it? A sliding doors game for the Tigers and the Bulldogs. Look, I've called a bit of the Bulldogs lately, and I did the West Tigers game at Magic Round. They got absolutely flogged by the rejuvenated Manly. So all of those Tigers fans absolutely jubilant with a 4-win, 1-loss record after the first 5 weeks. And Benji Marshall trying to get this big supporter base to a point where they can believe they might be big finals contenders. And it was a really good start to the year. And you're right, we had the circus around Jerome Luai signing for the Chiefs. And it's not just about him, but look, since then, their footy's been very average. And they take on a Bulldogs team that never far from drama, the Dogs, because just like the West Tigers. There's a big supporter base there craving for success. And look, the Dogs have been back in the finals the last couple of years without winning a final yet. Of course, it was this time last year they were on top of the ladder and decided to, you know, release their halfback Toby Sexton and let their hooker Reed Marnie go on to greener pastures, and he's now playing well for North Queensland. And since that moment, the Dogs seemingly haven't been as strong. You know, this year for them has been weird. They beat Penrith 7 weeks ago, then lost 6 games in a row, and then beat Melbourne.
For the first time in 6 weeks, game, set, bingo, the Bulldogs are going to win.
There's a bizarre, macabre type of appeal to this game. You know, I favour the Dogs slightly, but boy, there's going to be ramifications for the losing team in this one.
Sunday, at the other end of the table, we have got one playing two, the Panthers taking on the Warriors. The Panthers are likely going to be without a lot of their origin stars, including game one man of the match, Nathan Cleary. Are we going to see a true representation of a top of the table battle with all of that considered?
Well, the true representation that we're seeing, Poppy, is the opportunity cost of state of origin football. There has to be a trade-off which takes away from the club game. And this is the prime example, because you've got first versus second on the ladder. Yet, you know, we're lucky we will get to see Penrith and the Warriors play later on in the year. But there's going to be a massive asterisk over the result of this game on Sunday night, because even if we get to see some of those Penrith origin stars back up, which is unlikely, they're on the extended portion of the team squad. And the coach, Ivan Cleary, even last year when the Panthers were struggling and needed wins desperately, he still didn't risk some of those origin players in this period of the year. So, look, it's a shame from that perspective. I think we still will learn something, and in particular from the Warriors.
Last tackle, Warriors, a metre away. Egan goes right to Tamani Martin. It was a terrible pass play to the beauty to Wande Zielinski. He flies through the air like he's Superman. And with 99.5% of his body over the touch and goal line, DWZ gets it down. What a finish.
We know what Penrith are, but this Warriors team, who made a preliminary final in 2023 and have sort of been a bit flat since then, they're up and going once again. So I think this is a really good look at a Warriors team that's had to sort of fiddle with its playmaking because of the recent injury to Tana Boyd. So, look, we're not going to get the full experience of 1v2, but the spotlight is on, are the Warriors the real deal? They'll have to play very well at Western Sydney Stadium on Sunday to, I think, convince those that, you know, this is a club which we know at its best, the Warriors. They're outstanding and so entertaining. But can they do it when it matters, and can they be consistently top level? That's the question for Sunday's game now.
It's going to be a big weekend of rugby league. You can catch every game of Round 13 live and ad-free on ABC. Listen, Quentin Hull, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the footy.
Pleasure, Poppy.
Soundbites. Have you ever left a job but you didn't want to leave behind your friends? Well, neither did former Demon, now Giant, Clayton Oliver, apparently.
Yeah, I actually like Alice. We used to play right up there. Oh, sorry, the D's used to play right up there.
It can be hard to say goodbye. The FIFA World Cup is really ramping up, and fans all around the world are getting ready to cheer on their favourite players. For fans in Argentina, that includes, checks notes, New Zealand's Tim Payne.
Hola, todos. Muchas gracias por todo el apoyo. Disculpen mi español, sigo practicando el Duolingo.
Argentinian soccer content creator discovered he was the player with the lowest social media following and rallied. He went from less than 5,000 followers to over 1 million in just a few days. Sky's the limit for Tim.
Mucho gracias.
And while the Knicks swept their conference final, the Spurs and the Thunder are going to Game 7 in the NBA. The Spurs have had a secret weapon in recent games, though, and it's not Victor Wembanyama. It's the Salesian Sisters.
Super excited to see the Spurs playing really soon. So working on a little bit of our game. So I always got to wear Wimby's number because obviously I tower over the rest.
A group of nuns who just happen to be huge Spurs fans have been at the games blessing the team. Game 7 beckons. Let's pray it's a good one. I'm Poppy Penny and this is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to Stan Sport, the A-League's, Tim Payne's Instagram and Spurs reporter for the extra audio used in this episode.